Now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Johnny Donovan, thanks for the introduction. And yes, a Friday together here on the John Gambling Show at 77 WABC. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, good morning to you.
I will say I had expected you to say thanks for the great weather for the weekend.
I just expected from you, sir.
Come on. I mean, we haven't had good weather for a while.
It's a given. It's a given.
No power problems, sunshine, right temperatures, not a lot of humidity. Although where that rain came from yesterday, I don't know. Some parts of the city didn't have any. Some parts we had torrential downpours, and of course, places flood. Underpasses and that sort of thing. I was driving around the city to check it out, and we'd had to go very slowly through some of these puddles.
There he is, the man with the hip boots on.
I did not have to put on hip boots and jump out and do it. The DOT did it on their own.
You have brought a special guest with you this morning.
I have brought the Honorable R. James Nicholson, who is the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, who makes a big difference in the city. You know, we have more than 312,000 veterans in New York City. That is more people than live in Tampa, Florida. We have approximately, we have men and women in the reserves and the National Guard and active duty. There's approximately 500 city employees on military leave from their jobs right now. And do you want to know why the secretary is here?
Well, Mr. Secretary, first, welcome to WABC. A pleasure to have you and an honor to have you with us. What brings you to New York City?
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for having me. And you're part of John's time here today. I've come here to New York today with good news for the city of New York. Most importantly, from our perspective, for the hundreds of thousands of veterans of New York City, because after 2 years of very intensive study and review and analysis, we have decided that we will keep open our VA hospital in Manhattan and Brooklyn, and we are going to modernize our facility called St. Albans in Queens. The divining issue here was what would be best for New York City's veterans. And we had a mandate from the Congress to look at these hospitals to see where we could do some consolidation, as we have this mandate all over the country. And we did that, but the real criteria are excellence and convenience and access. And so what we are going to do is keep them open because of the excellence that they're providing. They complement each other, these facilities. Manhattan is a neuro hospital, cardiac. Brooklyn is known for its oncology, cancer treatment, radiation therapy, and women's health. And St. Albans is known for its excellence in geriatrics, nursing home, and what we call adult daycare. That is, older veterans come in and spend the day. So we can justify each of them and are thusly going to keep each of them operating.
I must admit I don't know much about the veterans' hospitals and the administration and what they do and what benefits the veterans get. Do they get complete medical care? Is that part of the benefit package?
Absolutely. Any veteran who has any service-connected disability, that is, was injured in any way while on active duty or a reservist now deployed in the war on terrorism, is entitled to full medical care from the VA. And I've got to use this occasion to brag a bit about the excellence of that care, because Business Week, just about three issues ago, and its front cover,
it's a great story.
Tagged the best hospital system in America and the biggest. And Harvard gave us their very prestigious annual award for innovations in government solutions, had a big banquet for us in Washington.
I mean, the quality of the care, and they've been doing it economically. I mean, it's a success story. You don't think about it. You think of government programs that can't be as good as private stuff. In our city, I'm very proud of our public hospitals. We certainly, in terms of the quality of the care and the economics, do as well, if not better, than almost all private hospitals. Here, the Veterans Administration, which you want them to do things great and take care of our veterans, and they're actually doing it. And it was a great story. I remember thinking about you when I saw it, thinking you really deserve a lot of congratulations. You know, if you remember, the there was a fear that the Veterans Administration, the VA, would close both Manhattan and Brooklyn facilities, and everybody was running around, and I wrote a letter to the commissioner and to the secretary and testified at VA hearings in September of 2005, and I lobbied Jim in March 2006. If you remember, he was here to announce a new Veterans Diabetes Initiative in New York City because diabetes is a big problem here. And I just am so thrilled that I think he's done the right thing, both for the veterans in our city who proudly service in uniform overseas and for the active duty men and women of the Army and Air Force, Navy, Marines, fighting under a flag today who are going to be tomorrow's veterans. But in all fairness, others deserve some credit as well, and we should thank our entire congressional delegation, most especially Senators Schumer and Clinton and Representatives Fasella and King, all of whom worked very hard on this. And I should also thank New York University Medical Center and the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation and Clarice Joines, who is the head of the Mayor's Office of Veterans Affairs, for all of their tireless efforts advocating to keep the Manhattan and Brooklyn VA facilities open. So this really is a big deal for
really,
New York City.
Mr. Secretary, does this mean that these facilities will remain the way they are and, as you say, expanded for the future? There's no review process on any time frame.
It does mean that, and I'd like to pick up on the mayor's comments as well and thank the delegation, the congressional delegation of New York, also the governor, Governor Pataki, consulted with us some. Another big part of this decision with regards to Manhattan and Brooklyn was that we have wonderful affiliations in Manhattan with NYU and its medical school, and in Brooklyn with the State University of New York, and so we were able to share the expertise of their faculty doctors with our veterans care, and that's very important to us here in New York and around the United States. We, the VA, employ about 5,000 people here in New York and spend roughly $1 billion in care for veterans. We also provide about another $700 million to New York veterans in benefits. And what we are going to do is to continue to consolidate the expertise in these facilities. They each have a major outpatient mission. They see collectively about 50,000 veterans a week in our outpatient clinics. And then those that need to be referred.
It's a very big deal. It's a lot of people.
Well, you know, across the nation, we see over 1 million people a week in this system.
That's extraordinary.
Which they've just said is the best health care giver in the country. So we're very proud of that, and we're proud of the all the people that work for us here in New York. We have a wonderful director of this system, a guy named Jim Fasetta, and the director of, in charge of the hospitals, the CEO, is a guy named John Danilian, both New Yorkers, devoted to veterans. This morning we had Cardinal Egan visit our Manhattan hospital and visit veterans, and it was a real boost to everybody.
Well, as you said, Mr. Mayor and Mr. Secretary, good news for New York.
It's good to see you. Yeah, in St. Albans, Queens, and in Brooklyn and in Manhattan, three different boroughs, the VA facilities, and they're going to stay and expand and keep doing what we want them to do, provide great care for people that live in the city, in this case for those who serve this country. And, you know, you read the papers every day. We have veterans who have come back and are overseas and putting their lives at the risk to protect all of us.
Mr. Secretary, thank you for coming, and a hearty thank you for all the veterans of New York City and the tri-state area. We appreciate
it. Thank you. Thanks for having me, and thanks for, you know, allowing me to be here to talk on behalf of New York's veterans. And
Jim,
the mayor said, you know, we the VA think we're the agents of a grateful nation for the people that have served us
right
to protect
Absolutely.
Our freedom.
Absolutely.
Every time you come to New York, you have good news. We want you to come back. I'm going to schedule you for next week.
Come back anytime. Speaking of that, stick around. We're coming right back at 77 WABC. We are back here on the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. The terror plot, of course, is on the front of everybody's mind. A frightening situation, frightening scenario that fortunately was interrupted in the right manner and with the gates and the procedures.
John, anybody that thinks that we can walk away from fighting terrorism. We can disagree about how to do it, but anybody that thinks we can walk away from it and the other side's just going to say, oh, well, that's fine, let's go back to going to the park on Sunday afternoon, is just wrong. There are people who find our freedoms, our ability to practice different religions and say different things, so threatening they want to destroy us. Now, I don't have any easy answers any more than anybody else does about how you go and fight. I do know that if you don't fight, you for sure, if we didn't learn anything.
You don't fight, you're going to lose.
What did we learn in the 30s of not standing up? And you know how many millions, tens of millions of people were killed during World War II and in the build-up to it and the Holocaust? Because no country stood up and said, we're not going to allow this kind of these things to go on. And here there were 20 or 30 people, I don't know how many in the total group, who were going to blow up thousands of people in the air.
Not to mention, if they timed it right, the people on the ground that might have been involved.
You got to fight back. And everybody says, oh, yes, yes, let's fight back, but not this way. Well, which way do you want to fight? I don't have a good answer. I'm not suggesting, I'm not defending any one policy
over the
other.
But somebody has to make the decision that this is the way we're going to fight it, and that the president, obviously, and his folks have the charge to do that.
The president and Congress that voted for it. I mean, everybody's running away from it, but, you know, the truth of the matter is they all voted. A vast majority voted to fight, and I don't know. People will say, well, the war in Afghanistan or the war in Iraq has nothing to do with this kind of terrorism, or the Israelis. I love this. The Israelis should have a more measured response. Rockets are going over their heads, heading towards their kids' schools.
How come the terrorists don't have measured responses? How come these people don't tell the terrorists that?
We should go halfway.
Please.
Halfway is like jumping halfway across the Grand Canyon, okay?
You're not going to make it.
And I'm not sure that the Israeli strategy is the right one. I'm not an expert. I'm not over there. It's not my kids who are in danger. I'd probably feel much more strongly about it if it was. But I do think it's our freedoms that are in danger over there, that we do have a big vested interest in making sure that Israel can live in peace. And if people attack them, they're going to attack back. What would we do if people started lobbing rockets across...
From New Jersey.
I wouldn't say New Jersey. From Canada or Mexico. Nothing wrong with the Canadians or the Mexicans. I'm just using a hypothetical example.
I understand. Let me ask you this. This thing's been going on. The observance of these people that wanted to do us in with these airplanes has been going on. The British Secret Service has had them under surveillance for almost a year. How long did New York know about it?
Let me say this. And I want to be very careful in our words. Everybody wants to know, but there's lots of things that are always going on in a very dangerous world. And I want to make sure that let me say that in this case,
I understand
the NYPD was informed. I don't know who else the British government informed. We were informed, and we had discussions about whether there was anything we could or should do. We took into our planning day in and day out kind of anti-terrorism efforts that we have, both intelligence and counterterrorism, everything that we learned. We are certainly looking at what these guys wanted to do to try to understand how better to protect New Yorkers and the federal government, the state government doing the same thing. You know, Pataki and I have talked about, is there anything we could do? In his case, for this thing, it's really Pataki that's increasing the response because it's the Port Authority, a state agency that's building up at the airports. But the federal government, the same thing, Michael Chertoff. And, you know, there's good relations between Washington and Albany and New York. We talk all the time. We talk overseas. New York City has its police officers around the world in big cities. And whether it's this event or other things where there's a possibility, and then it turns out there's nothing.
There must be dozens of these sort of surveillances going on. It's hundreds.
I will just give you one number to think about. New York City taxpayers support 1,000 police officers who just focus on counterterrorism and intelligence, and it is a big chunk of Commissioner Kelly's time.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, but I mean, it gives you perspective.
That there's a lot going on, as you say.
There's always a lot going on. Should you and I worry about it? day in and day out, you and I should go about our business. In lots of places in the world, the biggest threat you have is crime on the streets. Here, crime has come down dramatically. We're going to keep focusing on that. There have been people killed in terrorist attacks around the world, 3,000 of them roughly here in New York City 5 years ago. But day in and day out, the best thing you can do is to have the courage. That's our secret weapon, to fight terrorism, to have the courage to say, you're not going to you're not going to push me around. I'm going to speak my mind. I'm going to practice my religion. I'm going to try to build a better world for my kids, and I'm not going to go hunker down in my bed and wait for you to come and kill me.
Millions of people around the world and hundreds of thousands here in the New York metropolitan area at airports are going to be inconvenienced even further because of the crackdown.
I think most people, you know, every time we've ever talked to people, and I've talked to people myself, but we try to do surveys, is it really annoying that they are stopping in some subway stops and searching your bags? The answer invariably is yes, and I'm glad they're doing it.
Right. Okay, but again, the profiling issue. The people who have committed and have been caught doing this sort of thing come from one place. They are of one.
But
mind.
That doesn't mean that everybody that comes from that place.
John, no, true. And, no, you're right.
You know, you and George Weber sitting here, and I, to some people, might look like potential terrorists. Do you want them to just walk up and grab you? No, and the only ways you can prevent that is not to do it to somebody else. You can't just look at somebody and say you look like. Our whole country, 235 years of history, has been built on treating everybody equally and fairly, and we have a lot of protections, and I think those protections on balance, they may make law enforcement more difficult, but they don't prevent us from keeping each other safe, and if you give in on that, you've given in on one of our fundamental freedoms.
Okay. I understand. I think everybody does. Let me take a break. We'll come right back. Lots on the list to talk with Mayor Michael Bloomberg about right now, though, on the half hour. Our break with George Weber. George.
Oh, what a beautiful day it is.
You're with John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. We're going to take some phone calls before the hour is up. 1-800-848-WABC. If you'd like to get in line.
Yes.
Up in Connecticut. Tag. No. I was just trying to move from one place to another.
I mean, you have
another.
Tens of thousands of listeners. They're waiting to hear what you
hundreds
have to
of
say.
Hundreds of thousands.
Millions.
No,
millions,
not quite millions. We haven't got
and
there.
They're waiting. I run into a lot of people would say they love the show.
Well,
and they're waiting to hear what you have to say.
Well,
you,
I was going to ask you the question.
You have a fly going to it.
I was going to ask you the question. You've been quoted as saying on the loss by Joe Lieberman of the Democratic primary, the immediate segue into the independent. Independent party to run in November, that you are more than willing, if asked. Have you been asked by Joe Lieberman to go campaign?
I have not been, but, if he asked me, I would campaign for him. Let me tell you why. I don't agree with Joe Lieberman on a lot of things, but what I like about him is he has not followed the party line, whichever party he's in. He's said and stood up for what he thinks is right. And whether I think that is right or not, long term, that's the kind of representation the public needs in a legislature. And I mean, for the voters of Connecticut to throw out all the experience and seniority doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but that's up to the voters. What I like about this guy is he's smart and he's honest. And the fact that I disagree with him is nowhere near as important as the fact that he's principled. And I just find this fascinating. People say, he may be principled, but more important is party loyalty. Huh? That's what we
see. That's the attitude that has gotten us to where we are.
I said the other today. Day that you've hamstrung that Washington and all the legislatures, city, state, federal level. It's this partisan politics that keep us from doing what's right. And the reason why things don't work as well. People say, "Oh, business works so much better than government." That's not always true. Incidentally, some government works very well. I'd like to think the city's government is doing it. Our 300,000 employees really do a great job, much better than I think my friends in the private sector understand. and it's something I've really been an eye-opener for me in the last 5 years of just how great these people are. Not all, but most. But the partisan politics we have, and he had, then you had, I loved it, there were some elected officials who were out there campaigning during the Democratic primary for Joe Lieberman, saying he is the best candidate. Now, let me tell you what happened. 5,642 votes moved from pro-Lieberman to the other guy. 5,642 votes is 0.16% of the entire population of Connecticut. And on the basis of those 5,642 votes moving, all of a sudden the same elected officials say, oh, he's no longer the best guy. He's shouldn't be elected. You can't vote for him. You should vote for the guy that a week ago I was saying was not the best guy. Now, something's wrong when you think about that. The population of the state of Connecticut is roughly 3.4 million people. And 282,000 voted, about 8%. And 5,642 votes, if they'd switched from one side to another, the results would have been different. I don't understand how you can look yourself in a mirror and say, I just told the public that this guy was the best, but because 5,642 people voted this way, he's no longer the best.
Happens every day. We see it in all the legislatures, as you pointed out. Is it time for a third party here
well,
in America?
Well, Lieberman's not running a third party. He's running as an independent.
I understand, but I mean,
I don't know.
On a theoretical level.
I'm not in favor of a third party. I'm in favor of nonpartisan elections so that everybody has a chance to vote for the ultimate winner. And you don't want to have 10,000 people on the ballot, so you have to have some practical ways of winnowing it down. In New York City, if you remember a few years ago, I tried to get the public to endorse nonpartisan elections, which we have in New York City for special elections. We just don't have it for the general elections. And that's because the party, when you have one party that dominates, they want to keep that because they control it. If you take a look at the number of people in this city who voted in the Democratic Party for my opponent, it was something in the Democratic primary. It was 2 or 3% of the people in the city, some number like that. Okay, that's the number of people that determined who I was going to run against. And if it wasn't for the aberration of me coming along at the right time and Rudy before me, people say, oh, because you and Rudy got elected, you see it's a two-party system. It's not. Let's get serious here. Whenever you have one party, in this case it happens to be the Democratic Party, but I'd say exactly the same thing if it was the Republican Party dominating. When you have one party dominating, the truth of the matter is that it's the primary that, for all practical purposes, is the ultimate deciding election, and the number of people that are registered in the party and vote in those primaries are so minuscule. In this case, it was only 8% of the population of Connecticut. They're the ones that are determining the winner and really depriving everybody else from the opportunity to express
but
themselves.
But everybody in that particular party had the opportunity to vote. They made the decision and the choice not to.
No, but okay, fine. But even so, what about the people who are independent and not members of parties or in whatever other parties there are, Republican or whatever other parties they have in Connecticut? You're going to, even if you're right about that, you're going to disenfranchise everybody else? I still don't think that makes any sense. Why don't you just have some ways where we winnow down the number of candidates to a manageable number, and then everybody shows up for one election and picks between them, and you can have a pecking order. You say, if not the first guy, this would be my second choice. If not him, that would be my third choice. Some places have that. I grew up in, I think that's the way it was in Medford, Massachusetts when I was a kid. Proportional representation is one of those kinds of systems. There are ways to do it, but the idea, if we really believe in democracy, we want to enfranchise everybody. And if we really want good government, you want to pick people who are honest and say what they believe, even when it's not politically correct. And you go back and look at all of those decisions that really shaped this country for the better. A lot of those things were not popular. It took courage for somebody to stand up. And, we all say, oh, yes, we want courage. We want profiles in courage. And then we don't want a system that lets you do that. And here's a case of a guy who stands up for what he believes, and people want to throw him out because of that. I would argue there's a ways to say to him, that's not what I believe. I would like to convince you to do something else. But this is the kind of guy we all need representing us, and in this case, I think the voters of Connecticut, hopefully when it comes to the whole state, they would do that. And if I could help him, I'm sure I'd be happy to. I don't know if he wants my help. But
all right, you've been very generous with your praise of the governor, Governor George Pataki.
Yeah, he's been a good governor.
At the moment, however, he and you are on different sides of the question.
It doesn't make him a bad governor. He has a right to be wrong.
Don't put words in my mouth.
Okay.
I didn't say he was a bad governor. I'm just saying over the question of benefits to those who worked at Ground Zero. He has a bill on his desk to sign that would increase benefits, and you have suggested that it not get signed.
Well, I think George, who's going out of office in another 5 months, has been a good governor for 12 years, and he's been a pleasure to work with, and he's really had the interest of the state and the city at heart. He works very hard. He's scrupulously honest. I don't agree with him on everything, but then this is something I don't. One of the bills I don't care about so much. The other one, look, there's an economic cost to everything. This city has got a roughly $500 million in expenses already on the books because of some of these presumption bills that we're going to have to come up with money. The burdens should not be just placed on the New York City taxpayers. I'm not opposed whatsoever to providing health care for first responders, and there are a variety of programs that address the health care issues, but we are spending hundreds of millions of dollars already to help those who fell ill as a result of their service on the attacks, and we're just trying to ensure that the spiraling costs associated with this attack are not borne solely by the city, but also by the federal and state government, and the solutions to these issues are complex. For the rest of your life, anything that goes wrong, you're going to say was because of. Well, in the end, we all are going to have a problem and die of something. And what you want to do is, people, I think, all agree we should help those who stood up there and helped. But there's you have to make sure that there's a connection between what they did and what happened. Otherwise, you're just going to take care of it. You know, we have, step back for a second. Congress created a compensation fund and an insurance company. And if you remember, the compensation fund, we gave money. Feinberg was the guy. He really did a thankless job. He did a great job. He gave money. That was a compensation thing. The insurance company is different. The Congress created it, and when I listened to some of our representatives scream about this, they were the ones that created this thing. So they should go back and look what they voted on. It's an insurance company. Insurance company has to have the assets for long term, so that if there are claims down the road in insurance, you have to show liability. We also think that, look, there are people that will die as a result of their service at Ground Zero. There are people that will die because of the result of service for other things in this city. And we think that everybody should be taken care of. I mean, you take about, the fires, the firefighters who've been breathing bad air back when the Bronx was burning in this city. Yeah, they deserve some compensation as well if there really was damage. And part of the state and federal laws, and the federal law that Congress passed, I keep coming back, I listen to them scream, but they were the ones that passed these laws. They passed a law that said that cities really, companies and cities that rush in to save people and clean up shouldn't be held liable. And the reason for that is you want to make sure if there's ever another catastrophe that people are willing to do it.
Well, that comes back to the whole compensation question. If there's another terrorist attack, do we do the same act over?
Well, now, if cities are going to start incurring liabilities that they just can't possibly afford to pay, or construction companies the same thing, no, they're not going to do it. And that's one of the things. There was heroic work done. We want to make sure people get tested. We want to make sure they get taken care of. But at the same time, there is a practical aspect of this, of the cost, and who should pay. And people say, oh, you can't equate the lives with money. In fact, that's unfortunately
the insurance companies do it every day with life insurance.
Absolutely,
but in other ways,
you know, we want to make sure that the survivors, that people that work to the recovery effort and who die as a result of the diseases do get their accidental death pension benefits, and that's what we're going to pay for. The other stuff, the federal government should pay. So if you know Congress wants to do it, or the state, in this city, John, our pension benefits will cost this city, it'll go during my 8 years in office from $13 billion to $25
billion.
That's
a lot of money.
Per year. I mean, Albany keeps voting these bills.
And they're not going to get any smaller.
And they don't give us any money for it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, if Albany wants to do it, fine. Send the money with it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we'll take some phone calls when we come back after the break. 1-800-848-WABC. You will be next. All right, we've got a few more minutes with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show. We go to the phones. We're going to start with Chris in Brooklyn. Chris, you've got the mayor. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, with all due respect, I'd like to know how it is earlier this week. You made the statement that the new hiring practices at the FDNY does not result in a lowering of standards.
Yeah, it does not, Chris. What we've done is simply saying more people can take the test. But in order to get the job, we take everybody, we rank them from highest to lowest, and we start at the top. So if more people take the test, it doesn't mean you're gonna the people at the top of the list are going to be any less qualified. It means that we'll have more people, and it may be that there are people who qualified because they were in the military, or qualified because they had a job, or had 15 credits instead of 30 credits at college. But whether that those things matter in terms of how good a firefighter you're going to be, nobody really knows. But the test lets us figure out who are the people that have the skills that we want to hire. And then we're also we're starting to expand the Proby training program to give more training once they get selected. So if anything, we are increasing the test. The competition is going to be harder to get on to the top of the list because more people are going to take the test, we think. And it's going to be tougher to get through Proby school because we're going to strengthen that program as well. So we're really going in the other direction of we're not reducing standards. We are raising standards. And if you want to be one of our bravest, it's not going to get easier for you. It's going to get harder because more people will be there competing. They'll show up for that test.
All right, Chris.
Good for the city, Chris. It really is.
Thanks for the telephone call. Next, Mr. Mayor?
I guess Barry in Manhattan.
Barry, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Hi, guys. Really enjoy your show. You guys were talking about the parties, and I've always had a question of what good do we get out of having these parties?
You mean the two-party voting system?
Well, just Republicans and Democrats.
Well, we haven't always had those two parties.
There's
been other parties. And
they come and go.
Come and go, yeah. I mean, Republican and Democratic parties have been around for a long time now. I think Abraham Lincoln might be been one of the first president elected in the Republican Party.
Right.
And Carl Schurz, who's the park just by Gracie Mansion, he was one of the founders of the Republican Party. I just read this. I wasn't around at the time. No, the parties change. It is true that places that have multiple parties, they have a different form of government. You have to build coalitions to get enough votes because very seldom does one party have a majority. And those have their own problems as well. I don't have problems with parties. I have problems when party affiliation is the only thing and when one party so dominates that their primary is for all practical purposes the general election.
Well, and with the partisanship, you and I spoke about it last week, the partisanship in Washington and other legislatures around the country is almost brought us to political gridlock.
It leads to very bad decision-making sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes.
All right, Mr. Mayor, the music's behind us. It's time to go.
Enjoy.
Enjoy your weekend. We'll
you
see you
too.
Next Friday.
Looking forward to
Thank you very much. Coming up, Chris Wallace joins us, and I hope that you will stay right where you are.